Before I tag up and head for home after you have finished with this evening's class, please be reminded you can always reach out to me on social media. I'm especially hoping that the ladies do. Now, again, I want to create a forum for ladies to feel comfortable. So we will be creating Ladies Night, wall-to-wall sports talk designed for the babe in your life. And babes, I know y'all, all right, real talk, I have a lot of female friends who are, you know, single, willing to date, may not be avid sports fans, but they are, in fact, willing to embrace sports and have fun with you while doing it. I'm telling you. Now, there are certain traits that you're looking for. I'm going to tell you something, man. There's something to be said for finding yourself a former college cheerleader. First off, she probably understands the games, the most important ones, football and basketball. I'm a baseball guy. That's a date thing. So if you meet your cheerleader, then you take her to the ballpark, but don't propose. That could lead to a very bad situation, especially if she says no. Do y'all remember last year? This dude went all out his way, had a diamond, you know, showing it up on the video board, and she said no. You better make damn sure when you go pull off a stunt like that. So that's one thing we must keep aware of as we move this thing forward. Okay, so again, Ladies Night coming up here very, very soon. I have several faves, some you know, some you don't know, that will be contributing. And the ones that you don't know will be around so much that, you know, you're going to get to know them. And they're all smart, irreverent, witty women who do know sports. And fellas, what more can you ask for? You know, hey, what better place to meet for a drink than the cool restaurant that has multiple TV screens and y'all pulling for the same team? Or better yet, a lot of bets with somebody who pulls against you could lead to some big-time winnings. Talk about the proverbial happy ending. Wow. All right, let's go from the sublime to the ridiculous right here, boys and girls. And from a Negro, will you please stop getting in the way of your money? Okay, because it's one thing to make the money. It's another thing to give it away. And God bless Draymond Green. I love him as a player. I think he's a phenomenal dude, man. He's going to make a hell of an analyst. I can see as soon as he retires, NBC picks him up to save that tragedy of a studio show. Oh, my God. Whew. Capitalism kills quality of television, but that's a topic for another show. But apparently last Sunday, Golden State forward Draymond Green nearly went chest to chest with a fan as they were blowing out the New Orleans Pelicans. Now, the fan who didn't identify himself, this, of course, according to Associated Press, identified himself as Sam Green, 35 years old, from New Orleans, and he was standing and cheering after Draymond had been called for a shooting foul. But Draymond took umbrage with the fact that the guy repeatedly had been heckling him by calling him a woman. Oh, two layers of thoughts here. First off, I get Draymond being offended that somebody would call him a woman. If you're a man, that's pretty much as big a diss as there is. I mean, I get it. And then you're talking about a high-level, skilled, professional athlete, right? And then Draymond's black. Apparently, the heckler was white. And you bring that whole race culture thing into the mix because you do have certain people of a certain hue who do take license when they're in the seats that I used to sit in when I covered the league. Okay? Let's be clear about that. So this dude, Sam Green, apparently had been instigating, and Draymond snapped. Okay? Now, this all plays out in front of Courtney Kirkland, one of the longtime NBA officials. And he tried to defuse the situation, but it just didn't work, you know. And Green had been called Angel Reese by this, and I'm talking about Draymond Green, said he was heckling and admitted that he was calling Draymond Angel Reese. But if you Draymond, haven't you been called everything but a child of God in every arena in the league? So this notion that he's getting up under your skin has got to be a little tiresome, even for you to carry. You got to be better than that, bruh. Now you facing maybe a couple game suspension. So this jackass has gotten into your pocket and you standing your ground. Bro, turn your back. He ain't worth it. You got too much to lose, all right? Too damn much to lose. Television endorsements, the cute kid commercial with you and your little girl. People ain't gonna remember that. People ain't gonna remember that you're a good black man that's a father. You know what they're gonna remember? That you went over and got a white guy's face on the sidelines acting a fool. You gotta be bigger than that, bro. Now look, I know this ain't the 60s, the 50s, hell, the 70s, early on. Are we supposed to be in a more liberal workspace? But damn, man, I don't recall seeing any stories of like the greats, Bill Russell, Lenny Wilkins. I mean, when they was Dave Bing, I mean, you know, when those guys were coming into the league, they faced a lot more. So I don't know what this, you know, I mean, let's be real for a second. If you're heckling somebody about their gender, you know, gender baiting is just as offensive as race baiting to some people. And I ain't going to begrudge people, you know, who feel some type of way. But when you're in Draymond's shoes, you can't give in, man. I'm sorry. And this is not about being a punk. This is about being a man. Because sometimes when you just let a liquored-up jackass be a liquored-up jackass until he puts his hands on you. And if this dude is just heckling you, and you add to the confrontation by heckling him back, you can't do anything but lose. I mean, I used to see the old school players when I had my seat, and I saw some great basketball, my home seat, and we talked to the guy who put me there, Arthur Trish, and what happened is I was sitting second row, mid-court stripe at the old Omni. I saw the trash that had been talked by players throughout the league. I know they talk trash. They talk trash to each other. I've heard Larry Bird tell players, you can't stop this white boy. I heard that with my own ears. So I'm not making this up. And they talk trash, smacking on the backside. We boys after the game. Fans, however, let's open the can up on you. And we got this highly polarized racial time in our society where certain white fans sitting on the floor or up close to athletes feel as though they can treat them some type of way. You know, you always get heckled. You can get called out your name. I'll give you the benefit of the doubt with that. Okay? I really do. But sometimes you do, in fact, cross the line. But as an athlete, okay, you're not catching the slurs that Bill Russell did when he couldn't go in the front door with Bob Cousy and, I guess, John Havlicek and the boys back in the day. All right? So let's ease some things up here. Understand a man has to stand his ground. Understand a man got to do what a man got to do in order to protect himself and his family. I'm all in with that. And I think Draymond Green, much like Steph Curry, is the personification of a great black American father. You know, you haven't heard anything off-court scandal-wise with either of those gentlemen. Okay? You haven't. And they've been class acts as it relates to, well, most of the time. I mean, I think Draymond is a little misunderstood sometimes because, I mean, he got his point where he's a little rough around the edges, but aren't we all? I mean, you can't have that facade all the time. But in this particular case, you know better than that, bruh. You know better than that. So now the league is putting a shine on you once again that's going to lead to subjective officiating even more so than you are accustomed to, Draymond. Come on, man. Dude, I think it would be a great opportunity to watch you and Steph try to put a bunch of youngins on your back so you can get to the NBA Finals this year. But I'm saying, your days in the league are coming to an end. If you get fined for this, this is money that you're not going to get back. Why are you going to let some, you know, diseased perspiration from a baboon's backside get you in trouble? I'm saying, take your money. You work too hard to get your money. Hell, if you want to give money away like that, give it to me. I start a foundation or something with it. But damn, dude, come on. You know, and I get, you can't reason with liquored up, in this case, white dudes, who just don't know how to shut up. But you don't want to embrace that. You got plenty of ways you can get hand gestures. Yeah, tell him that he's number one with something other than your index finger. You feel me? There's that little squeezing action around your package that you might want to think about doing. Yeah, gestures, they don't cost you money. You don't cost you money, Draymond? Get in a jackass's face. Come on, man. There are ways that you stand your ground these days, bruh. And standing your ground don't mean you should be giving no liquored up jackass your money. Okay? Don't lose no more money on account of these liquored up jackasses. Okay? Let's be clear for a second. And just because you got enough in your account to sit courtside and pay four figures for your seat, that don't mean you get to demean and discredit anybody. This ain't a black thing. This ain't a white thing. This is a human thing. And that's the damn problem. Ever since the conspiracy theorist whites have taken control of politics, we keep seeing this very aggressive behavior and posture for no other reasons than people think they can flex. That's the whole point I'm trying to say. So Draymond Green has to understand that when people like Sam Green are, you know, verbally screwing with him, you kind of have to sometimes play that off so you can keep your money in your pocket and keep them endorsement deals. Because that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to make you look bad. So hopefully you'll go broke. And that's going to do it for me, Professor G. Thanks for hanging out with us. Don't forget, class is open in 23 hours. Until then, you're dismissed. It's Sports Rap Network. Holla! And what's the deal, boys and girls? It is Professor G. Consider class now open. That's right. It is OG Sports Radio. Barbershops. Sports talk the way it used to be, at least according to me, that is. Thanks for hanging out. I spell my given government name, Mark with a K, Gray with an A. But as always, when we open up class, it's Professor G. And we got a lot of stuff to break down and to analyze. Interesting things happening all over the sports groove universe at this time. Plenty of stuff to get to, NFL suspensions, a player's house being burglarized. I mean, what's going on with the Sanders family? You know, everything was warm and fuzzy a few years back. Well, I guess Prime did have the toe amputated or what have you, but damn, Shedeur Sanders makes his debut, and then the folks in Cleveland showed just how much they want to see him play by breaking into his house. Cleveland's a hell of a place, man. I'm just saying. Wow. Hoops. I mean, let's be real for a second. LeBron James, game time decision. Anxious to see whether or not he's going to make his debut tonight. You know, literally waiting with bated breath to see what happens with LeBron. This, of course, tries to offset for Victor Wembanyama, who's going to be out at least, well, probably a month with a strained left calf. And he was balling, too. I mean, I'd had my own, I just don't have the patience to do fantasy sports. Football is the perfect fantasy sports, as an aside here. Because it's once a week. I don't know how geeks do it every single day for at least 162 games. In baseball, that's maniacal. For 82 games in basketball, semi-maniacal. I don't know how y'all do it. Nonetheless, I had my own personal Wimby watch going, and he was just killing it. And again, like I say, the NBA really doesn't begin until Christmas, okay? So when you are opening presents, you know, and for those of you who eat that god-awful pumpkin pie, here it is. That's when the season starts, okay? I'm sure NBC will have finally gotten their studio product together. You know, hopefully, well, I mean, you know, I'm a big fan of Noah Eagle, and you can't go wrong with Mike Tirico, but basketball don't start till Christmas, and probably Wimby's going to be out till then. You've got Giannis Antetokounmpo of the Bucks. He's out with a left groin strain. He's going to have an MRI, waiting for those results. I mean, it's crazy. The stars in the NBA are always hurt. And this is a non-contact sport. What's going on? Really? I think, you know, Adam? Knock, knock. Adam? Adam, yeah, this is Mark. Professor G. Yeah, Adam, listen to me now. Find the doctor that can cure what's hurting all your players. That time has come. Because fans want to see their players play, not sit on the bench. That's real talk, bro. So we'll come back and talk a little bit more about that. You know, that's kind of like the you know, ridiculous. But we got to go back to the supply for a second. And for the record, everybody knows by now that given that I am DMV bred, I have a genetic makeup that hates the Dallas Cowboys. All right, let's just be clear about that. I'm pulling for any team that's playing the Cowboys at any time. That was until last night. And while it was so difficult to embrace the moment as a fan, as a human being, what the Cowboys showed was something I never have given them credit for. And that's character. Character as a organization, character as a team, just straight up, you know, the character of the star has always been something that was a little shady because I'm old enough to remember this place they call the White House down there, not that far from Valley Ranch back during the 90s. Y'all Cowboy fans remember the stories about that. All kinds of shenanigans went on there. Shenanigans of low character by Hall of Fame caliber talent. You know, let's just say that there are rumors and many people have written about the white lines, you know, in said White House, if you know where I'm coming from with that. We're not alleging this here. This is a body of work. As long as you were winning games, everything was footloose and fancy free in Big D, right? And we saw they were winning championships and also catching charges down there. But this is a different Cowboy at least regime on the sidelines. And last night, again, being from the DMV, I had a burgundy and gold moment when the team was known as the Redskins. And there was a guy named Marty Schottenheimer that I believe was coaching the team at the time, I believe, when Sean Taylor passed away. Phenomenal safety. I mean, my goodness. If you could put Ed Reed and Ronnie Lott into one player, you had Sean Taylor. All right? And why do I bring that up? Because Washington had to play after Sean Taylor was murdered in his home defending his family. And I remember how it affected not only the team, but the area of the DMV. You know, it was just, we were all crushed. I mean, devastated. I had to do local radio on that day. I'll never forget it. So last night, as, you know, I'm going through and dealing with the Cowboys just straight rolling the Raiders. And I didn't expect much of this game. And you may have even heard me, like, you know, at the end of the game, take shots to it. But there was something bigger that was going on in that game last night. And it was about the Cowboys showing character for a change and honoring their teammate, Marshawn Nealon, who took his own life about 11 games days ago. This was the first game that the Cowboys played since he passed away. It was a road game, and it was in Vegas. And why do I bring that up? The thoughts of Cowboys in Vegas bring to mind, you know, white lines, strippers, you know, all the stuff of the greatness of the past. The teams, for those of you of a certain age, that Troy Aikman played on. Not that he was a part of the White House crew, I'm alleging. But what I'm saying is, there's some stuff I bet he looked and turned away from. Moose Johnston of Fox Sports, for those of you of a certain age who didn't see him play, he has to turn away and look away from a lot of stuff. The folks inside that inner sanctum know how, while they were winning, they were still getting it in. This Cowboy team may not be winning, but you could see Schottenheimer type influence in the emotion that the way that the team played. They comported themselves professionally in a way that they handled their grief and honored their fallen teammate with honor. And I keep telling, and that's my whole thing. How you go out? Are you going out shady? Giving? Are you going out quitting? You know, how you gonna go out? And despite taking his own life, the Cowboys rallied the troops, went on the road, and probably played their best game of the season. And give it up for Dak Prescott, who has been marvelous in this moment. I'm not a Dak guy. All right, not at all. I think he's been given a whole lot and hadn't really achieved anything. You know, I'm that guy that believes to whom much is given, much is required. And I don't think that he's satisfied the requirements of being a Dallas Cowboy quarterback because he hadn't even gotten to the championship game, much less the Super Bowl or win it. But just like Tony Romo, he too will be a media star at the end of his career. Still, the character that they showed last night as a team, forget the organization because we all know, anybody in the inner sanctum of the sports industry knows that one of the places that players like playing for is Dallas because of the way Jerry treats people. You part of the Cowboys, you part of that family. If you're a Commanders fan, you sort of look at it as a cult, but that's a topic for another show. Still, I got to give the organization and the team itself, man, say what you want. Even without Micah Parsons being there, this is a team that's got enough talent. And once they figure it out in the front office and stop, you know, boondoggling in the front office, shall we say, this seems to be an organization, A, now that has some character, number one. And I'm talking about character between the white lines. You know, a lot of times when the team has been struggling, you see they just give in or they get punked. Sorry, Cowboy fan. Over the last 5 or 7 years, I've seen quality teams in big moments on prime time punk that star. Okay? Let's be clear about that. You know, Roger Staubach, Troy Aikman, Emmitt Smith, Tony Dorsett. None of them coming through that door no more, y'all. All right? Let's be clear. Ain't no Emmitt Smith or Troy Aikman. Remember that. But what I saw last night was the character that you build a contender around. And I don't know who's setting the tone here. I got to believe it's a guy named Schottenheimer, because I've seen the moment of grief and how it's handled, you know, by a guy like Marty. And you have to tip your hat to Brian Schottenheimer. And I don't mean this as a knock on Mike McCarthy or anything like that, because I'm pretty sure that Mike McCarthy would have handled the moment the same way. He seems to be that type of dude, understanding that it's bigger than just a game. But you don't often see that with the Cowboys. What you see is the, you know, three-ring circus, you know, Jerry, the cheerleaders, oh yeah, and then the team, right? But this was a moment where I really got the sense that behind closed doors, behind enemy lines to a hating fan like me. See, and remember, y'all, the first step in handling the problem, if you want to look at it as such, is you got to admit it. I hate the Cowboys, okay? I wish them nothing but doom and gloom on the field. But in this moment, you know, you just got to not only respect the way that they played the game, you could feel in the TV clips and listen to the video and see how last night for those players was more than just a game. It was more than just a step towards the playoffs. It was a moment in their lives, good, bad, or indifferent, is going to have a significant impact, and they will never forget that moment. And it was so big for those young guys to get a dub. I'm Professor G. Mark Gray. It's OG Sports Radio on Sports Rap Network. It is me, it's me, it's me. It's Professor G back at it. It is OG Sports Radio. Thank you very much. Literally ones of fans at my feet around here, and I just love them all. Anyway, remember, I'd like to have you join me in some way, shape, or form, and you can always leave a video comment on the HBCU Sports Nation on Facebook. Hey, if you come correct, I'm going to put you on the show, for real. All right? I promise that. You come correct with a good take, hey, you only get a minute, max. You know, the minimum of 30. So you're either giving me 30 seconds or a minute. All right? And we will be posting that on the HBCU Sports Nation fan page. So join me with your takes. A little bit later on in this quality radio product, at least according to myself, I'm going to talk with Gary Lang, who is a good friend and play-by-play announcer for Delaware State, where DeSean Jackson is making headlines as the biggest story of the 2025 HBCU football season. So we're going to go to Denver. I was talking to Gary yesterday when we were setting up, you know, a time that we were going to converse. And the first question is, if you're a play-by-play announcer for a team, it is so hard when they suck. Okay, it really is. Because you have to tell the story in real time of how bad they are, but you've got to keep your energy up. you got to be sort of positive. I mean, it's not like when you're right here, when you're opinion driven, right? You can just say, hey, yo, we stink. Chances are, if you say we stink and we need a new coach, the team's going to need a new announcer probably next week because they're going to fire you. That's just how it works. All right. But again, we continue to move it on. I'm anxious to talk to Gary because things change when your team is a winner. And they have lost for like ages in Delaware State. I think it's been like up until now, like 7 or 8 straight losing seasons. They were winless in the conference last year. They win Saturday, they win the conference. Now, I'm not going to guarantee that. I think the guy on the other sideline who has been known to spoil the party just may do it again. You don't know who Chinnis Barry is, but he's one of the better FCS coaches in America. I think the fact that he's at South Carolina State doesn't give him the biggest media platform to show his wares, but folks around the country know who that dude is. That should be an interesting matchup. So I'm interested in talking with, Gary about what's going on in Delaware, what Deshaun has done. What's the secret sauce? You know, how much of Coach Prime's playbook did he take? And because I know they had a conversation. We do know that. Everybody picks up the phone now. When they get these HBCU opportunities, they call Coach Prime and get the lay of the land. Every place is not Jackson State. And what do I mean by that? Well, Jackson State football is a significant component to the overall revenue of the city. For those 5 games that they have at the crib, or really 3 games, it's a big deal down there, much like it is in Oxford with Ole Miss or Starkville. And it's not Starkville, boys and girls. It's Starkville, where Mississippi State is. Don't you ever call it Starkville. I made that mistake once, and, well, was very close to being hung. Just kidding. Just kidding. It's only history, folks. You know, every once in a while, you slip back in there, and it just comes out. Why? It's only facts. Anyway, back to the topic at hand here. We got some more NFL stuff I got to get to right now. Now, again, I'm done being a nice guy for a second because you got to give the Cowboys credit for what they did and going out and repping for honor their fallen teammate. All right, that's great. There's a dark side to the NFL right now. And what's happening is as the league puts out its mandate for there to be better sportsmanship, dudes are now acting like bigger fools when they lose their composure. And what is the deal with this childish behavior that has become spitting on the guy in front of you? First off, I'm not one to preach violence, but if that's the way you're going out on the field, you kind of deserve something. Real talk, man. I mean, that is the crudest form of expressing your displeasure. Before you do that, a real man punches somebody. So now, Bengals wide receiver Ja'Marr Chase has been suspended without pay for 1 game because he spit on Steelers cornerback Jalen Ramsey during the game. Now, again, to Chase's credit, when you don't have your quarterback in Joe Burrow and you thought you had a chance to go to the Super Bowl and your season is gone in the toilet, you probably are frustrated. I get that. Most competitors are. And for the record, I'm a card-carrying apologist for LSU. That's one of my guys. But unacceptable, dude. And then we see, Jalen Carter open the season getting thrown out of a game for the Eagles, a game they went on and lost. Maybe it's me, but I think there's a correlation between disqualification when you spit on somebody on the opposite team. People are supposed to know that, yet they still do it. What's going on here? I'm serious. And again, this is why I need y'all to hit me up, HBCU Sports Nation fan page on Facebook. You can leave me a comment on TikTok or IG. But I want to know what's going on here. Because, you know, I have more respect if you punch somebody in the face. I ain't advocating for it. But to spit on somebody is common. It's cruddy. It's disgusting. It's unsanitary. I mean, really, let's be clear. With a commander in chief in charge of, what is that, Health and Human Services? That Kennedy guy who takes heroin every day because he's got a worm on his brain or something? With that dude, governing health and whatnot, he needs to be coming out and saying, yo, that, you know, you could really make a criminal charge for spitting somebody these days because you don't know what kind of disease is going on in this world. I mean, be real. Folks are nasty. Folks are promiscuous. With all due respect, I mean, you know, pro athletes getting it in. You know, and sometimes when they put it in something, they catch something. You can't be spitting on nobody. What is that? It's the lowest end of the food chain. And you get suspended without pay for one game, please. To me, that should be 4 weeks. I'm sorry, man. You want to nip stuff in the bud? You take 4 game checks. What's one game check? That's a slap on the wrist. What kind of optic is that? And for all the tedious stuff that you call on the field and players getting suspended for helmet-to-helmet contact and all that, you're judging helmet-to-helmet contact the same way you're judging spitting. Come on, NFL. You got to do better than that. Roger, the optics just don't work for those of us who are woke. I'm sorry, I shouldn't say work. I meant critically thinking. You know, but when you're woke, you do have tendency to, you know, critically think. See both three sides, if you will. And to me, this, you know, the spitting thing has to be, if the league wants to get out in front of it, that's a bad look on a lot of different fronts. Because every time someone is spat on, you get the replay of looking at hot spit coming out of the mouth of somebody in a helmet in the direction of somebody else, which gives the youths you know, imagery to think that it's cool to go out there and do it on the field. Enough already. Yes, suspense. Am I sit him for 3 games for spitting? Really? One game paycheck is not going to deter an in-the-moment action because guys are all amped and whatnot. You start hitting them in the back of the head. Hey, look, I ain't trying to lose a month to pay. Think about that for a second. Okay, suspend a guy for multiple games for spitting. Oh, no. We can take you away from your team and from the bank for about a month. No. Go sit this one out. You do it, and heaven forbid you do something stupid like that, say the middle of October, and your team is around 500, a couple games out of first place in your division. I bet you one thing, you won't see anybody else spitting in somebody's face. That is just damn disgusting. It shows, and sorry, you know, Jamar, you embarrass your family when you do stuff like that. I want to believe your family raised you better than that. I mean, I don't know you or your family like that, but I'm pretty sure that, you know, in order to get to LSU, you had to be some kind of upper-class family member, because quite frankly, if you're in high school and you're an athlete and you're on them travel teams, your folk gotta have loot. So I know he come from a better household than that, even though I don't know his people or nothing about him personally per se. That's a badass look. That's just awful. And you know, first part of the season you see it, all right. It's been happening, you know, sporadically around the league. What is the deal with that? You know, hit me on social media at The Sports Groove. please, you can hit me on Threads. You can hit me on, what is that? Well, I am on IG and TikTok, so if you want to leave a video, I'll definitely get you. What is the deal with dudes spitting on each other? I mean, isn't that childish? Didn't we leave that at the very least in elementary school? Right? Because that's a heinous diss. I know in some places in this country, not that I would advocate for it, that they may cost you a limb or something more. Y'all got to cut that out. What is happening to the sports world? We got dudes that continue to gamble and get caught, right? And we also have fools that are going back to preschool and spitting on another kid they do not like. And these are millionaires, role models, you know, people that kids say they want to be like, and you giving them one game? Oh, no, 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 Roger. And Roger, apparently your decisions aren't being respected, at least the way I see them, largely because you're not enforcing them with real punishment. And if you want to get rid of spitting as part of some sportsmanship clause within the next collective bargaining agreement, and I would use some sort of verbiage like multi-game suspension at the commissioner's discretion for salivating on another person. Because let's be real for a second. You know, with the freaks they land in bed with, you never know what you're going to catch. All right? And I don't mean to be crude or distasteful about it. We're talking about a question of health. And when the owners start losing players for, you know, contracted disease from spitting, do you then go, you know, red alert? Just saying. It's your boy, Professor G. Mark Gray, it's OG Sports Rap on Sports Rap Network.
The voice of Delaware State football for many, many years, Gary Lang joins us right now as we continue here on OG Sports Radio. Gary used to have one of the tougher challenges during a week like this when calling Delaware State Hornet games, but it's changed a little bit this season with the arrival of Deshaun Jackson. And Gary, thanks for taking the time to join us. I got to get your thoughts, having been around that program so much. How much fun is it to be in a championship place, you know, to compete at this time of the year for everybody outside the team?
Well, if you can just imagine coming off of a one-win season and then getting another one-win season, you bring in a new head coach and there's uncertainty at the beginning of the year. But boy, what a difference. And the whole campus has been electrified. The week before the Norfolk State game in Philadelphia, ESPN with a live program from Memorial Hall. It was just an atmosphere that hasn't been around that university for I don't know how long. I can't remember a situation like they've had.
Gary, so let's talk about when you look at a first-year head coach who has no experience being a head coach and to come in and set a tone and turn the whole program around. What have you seen in the personality of Coach Jack that has made this thing work so fast?
The intensity that made him an all-pro wide receiver is what he's brought to this team. He's brought discipline to the team. He even said that as a player, sometimes he was difficult, and he was not going to put up with that from any of his players. They were going to toe the line. The other thing that he did that has made a huge difference was there was concern about his lack of experience as having not been a head coach. He put together an incredible coaching staff of people who really know what they're doing. A number of former NFL players, maybe most notable because his name recognition is higher, is Clinton Portis. The effect of that, you can see that when you look at the stats on the running game. A running back who has gone over 1,000 yards in the season, it's been many years since they've had one of those.
And with somebody like Porter to that point, just brings that credibility that Coach Jackson does, which really sort of amplifies the notion that the former player can have an immediate impact on campus. We saw it with Coach Prime. We're now seeing it with DeSean Jackson. Do you get the sense that the players find it an easier buy-in when they're familiar with a personality like that?
Yeah, some of the stories were that at first they thought he'd be more of a buddy, and he was DeSean Jackson, the wide receiver, and he made it clear from the beginning that he was Coach Jackson. And that he was going to be in charge of things, and he was going to bring a certain style and an atmosphere to the team, and they had to buy in or they would be out. They bought in.
Gary Lang is our guest. He joins us. He is the voice of Delaware State football. Delaware State and South Carolina State are going to pretty much meet for all the marbles in the conference in that bid to the Celebration Bowl. And, Gary, you and I have been big picture to HBCU sports. If Delaware State wins, still a big if, because South Carolina State is quite the formidable challenge, and those familiar with the conference know that. But if they win with a personality like that, what do you think that would do for an event like the Celebration Bowl?
It's going to draw some viewer interest, just as happened a couple of weeks ago on the 30th of October when they played a game in Philadelphia against Norfolk State, where there they used the power of the Jackson and connection with his former Eagles co-star quarterback, Michael Vick. And it draws the attendance announced at 47,000 people for an FCS HBCU football game in Philadelphia.
On a Thursday night, opposite the
on
NFL.
On a Thursday night.
Yeah. That's what got me. Because I when they moved the date and time, and I said in this platform that I thought it was a bad move because you were opposite the NFL on Thursday night, and you were playing in a sports venue. Not only was I wrong, that's like striking out twice. You know what I'm saying? I did not see that working on the week during the week. I did not expect them to get almost a 50-burger out of it. You know, that's an impressive marketing thing, galvanizing. Do you think that if Delaware State wins this championship, they become a brand in that region, and then what does that do for the program?
Be a great jump for the program. They've already going to experience a great jump from the program when the portal opens up at the end of the season. And a lot of players are going to be looking at Delaware State and saying, that's a place we'd like to go because things happened there.
Gary Lang joins us right now as we continue to talk some Delaware State football as they prepare to compete for the MEAC championship on Saturday. Check your local listings for the game, and we're efforting to find out whether or not we will be a part of the distribution of that contest. But as you look at the matchup and what you've seen of South Carolina State, how formidable is that a challenge, you know, because you're familiar with your team and the one-on-one matchups as you look at them. What must Delaware State do to, in fact, beat South Carolina State this weekend?
One of the first things that's going to have to happen is the defense is going to have to push the South Carolina State quarterback out of the pocket. He is a tremendous passer, and they can't let him feel comfortable in there. They're going to have to get him running. They're going to have to put bodies on him and knock him down a few times and take him off of his powerful game. If he can control situation from the quarterback spot, the defense is going to have a long day. And the Delaware State defense has, especially the secondary, has had to make some great improvements over the season. They're going to have to be up to the task. Good wide receivers for South Carolina State. For Delaware State, the running game's got them there. You know, you dance with the one who brought you. So you're going to look for that powerful running game. And they've got that 1-2 punch combination that they can work with a couple of backs. And they're going to have to try to open up the middle a little bit. They had some trouble against Howard last Saturday, running through the middle until late in the game. They're going to have to be able to block, open up that middle, and get some of that explosive thing happening.
Gary, talk for a second about how difficult it is when you have so few conference games. I mean, I think teams play like five conference games. Do you think that the conference gets an accurate representation for a real champion when you only have that many teams in the league?
Well, it's simply the way it is. You know, you have six teams in the league that play football. You're only going to have five conference games, which makes it hard to win the championship. You can't afford to lose. You lose one, you may be out of the picture. You lose two, and your season's over.
Yeah, my season came to an end like on a missed field goal last weekend as well. For those of us who are fans Morgan State.
I can sympathize with you, but I am happy with that result.
Yeah, it worked out pretty good for you, didn't it, bro?
Yes.
Anyway, so your thoughts. I mean, coaches are only as good as the players that they have. Who are the ones to watch this week and that have stood out for you for the Hornets this season?
Well, for the Hornets, the quarterback who's brought him along all season long didn't play much against Howard. In fact, they used him on a spot basis and mostly as a runner. He's had some injury issues. Coach Jackson has applauded him for his courage and his toughness to be able to do what he's done with injuries. Hopefully, not being into the game too much last week meant he was able to heal up a bit. He's going to have to be strong. He has shown that he's a good passing quarterback, but he can also pull the ball down and run with it. He has 11 rushing touchdowns on the season. So South Carolina State is going to have to watch for that. So actually, at some times in the game, you have at least two powerful running backs in the game, one at the quarterback spot and one at the regular tailback spot. The running game is going to have to carry Delaware State, and they're going to have to put points up on the board.
You know, there's somebody on the opposite end of this conversation who would be me, who remembers when Delaware State was a tough out. I mean, the legendary days of Bill Kolick, when they were running that wing tee and you knew what was coming and you just couldn't stop it. And there was an excitement around the program that kind of brought a great deal of energy to the campus and to the city of Dover. Are you seeing that being revisited right now?
Absolutely. On the day before homecoming, there was a luncheon on Delaware State's campus, and it was the 40th anniversary of the MEAC championship team that won it under Bill Kolick. And a lot of the guys came back, a lot of red shirt, red jacket guys, Hall of Famers at Delaware State were there. And the feeling that you got from them, they were excited about what was happening with the program this year. And they were sending a message to the team of, we did it. Now it's your turn.
That's great to see, man. That's the wonderful part about college athletics, man, is just to watch how the memories that are forged, especially when you inside the Crucible College Sports, and you get to watch kids share a championship experience. Hey, good luck, Gary, and extend that to Coach Jax. And we expect a phenomenal game and another great call from you on HSRN. So, you know, travel safe, and hopefully we'll be talking about a trip to the Celebration Bowl the next time you join us here on Sports Rap Network.
From your mouth to God's ears, man. I hope that happens, and hope to see you soon in person.
All right, likewise, my friend. Gary Lang, the voice of Delaware State, breaking us off with the Hornets knowledge here on OG Sports Rap. Thanks a lot, Gary. Appreciate you, bro. You know, I think that's what makes the whole experience of college sports what it is that in small towns, really, which is what Dover, Delaware is, you find yourself with civic moments that arrive from basically moments that happen in your community. And this whole Delaware State thing is clearly about the community right there. I know a lot of people in that community. Some of my best friends were part of that 40th anniversary championship celebration. So It just means a lot more in certain places at this time, and it's a tremendous story. But mind you, as warm and fuzzy as it is in Dover, make no mistake about it, South Carolina State is by no means a slouch, all right? It would not be an egregious failure if Delaware State loses this game. And even though South Carolina State is on the road, and I'm not intentionally throwing out any shade, okay, because a lot of people be like, you just hate. No, I'm not hating. South Carolina State is for real. They've got tremendous talent on both sides of the football, and they're extremely well coached. And when you look at where the programs are right now, to me, this serves as the key to the game. Delaware State hasn't been to a championship moment in football in nearly four decades. It's been only maybe 3 years since South Carolina State wasn't playing in postseason. And that is a mitigating factor going into a game like this. When your program hasn't been there, can you handle the moment? Some teams handle it, you know, like they've been there and done that before. And then there are other teams who simply are overwhelmed by the moment. It'll be interesting to see if Delaware State handles that moment. That's going to do it for me, Professor G. It's OG Sports Radio on Sports Rap. The Network. Holla back.
What's the deal? It's your boy, Professor G, back at it. OG Sports Radio here on Sports Rap Network. Thanks for hanging out with your boy at this time. As always, I'm saying, you got some thoughts on spitting and fines in all sports, really, but particularly NFL. NFL is right now supposed to be about sportsmanship. You got players like Ja'Marr Chase of the Bengals, who probably just wanted the week off. I mean, get away from, you know, scrub football without Joe Burrow being in the lineup. But you don't spit on somebody to do that. And I'm being totally facetious about the fact him wanting a week off. But I'm totally serious. And so when you see Jalen Carter of the Eagles open the season before the first play of the season, a season that's supposed to be defined by players knowing they're going to be called out for violating sportsmanship rules, right? And I would say it is a violation of sportsmanship when you spit on someone, right? So if you violate the tenets of sportsmanship and the value, suspending from somebody else, somebody for a game doesn't really send a message. Apparently, they haven't gotten it in the NFL. So what must you do? I say two games, two paychecks, you're done. Your thoughts? Hit me at The Sports Groove on social media, on X, Threads, Facebook at The Sports Groove, or on the HBCU Sports Nation fan page. I'm anxious to hear from you about that one. Now, this goes from, like, I guess the sublime to ridiculous. And it's really cool. I tell you what, you no longer want to be a sports agent for athletes. Trust me. You want to be a sports agent for college coaches right now. Now, you got to remember, a little bit over a month ago, on October 12th, a day after they lost at home to Northwestern, Penn State fired James Franklin. Well, I'm going to tell you something, ladies and gentlemen. I don't know who his agent is, but that dude is a bad man, because the Hokies became the first Power Four football program to fill their coaching vacancy by bringing him to Blacksburg. So he goes from the land of Nittany Lion in the middle of nowhere, Pennsylvania, to Blacksburg, Virginia, and the land of nowhere of Virginia. Now, I will say this, in all fairness, dude won 100 games at Penn State. His total record was 104-45. He won a Big Ten championship when it was a different Big Ten than we know now in 2016. He won a Big Four bowl game in 2017, the Fiesta Bowl. And in 2022, like 3 years ago, they won the Rose Bowl. And they also won a game last year in the first round of the college football playoff. Now, again, you could make a compelling argument that Penn State jumped the gun by firing Franklin when his team was still 500. So they were on the hook for a $50 million buyout. Now, I'm not trying to be petty, but I don't know what the extension, you know, the number of years that he got on the deal, because that wasn't in the story that I refer to right now. And I'm going based upon the story that I found on Associated Press. And hey, this doesn't benefit me, but it's worth a buck or two a month to have AP as your news source. Just saying. And now that they made it publicly available, I think you might want to look into that. Anyway, Penn State was on the hook for a $50 million buyout. And I know the president of Penn State must have contacted the president of Virginia Tech to let him know he was going to send him some pierogies or something. You know? I'm like, because in these trying times, when you got to eat $50 million and somebody comes along and offers a $9 million annual contract, the question becomes, how many years? And that's here goes the precedent that I'm looking to see be set right now by athletic administrators around the country who are going to have to make decisions about who you go after and how long do you guarantee their money for. And I think when you start looking at places like LSU that was on the hook for, what, $96 million for Brian Kelly until the governor stepped in, and Governor Jeff Landry, you got plenty of other things to be worried about in the great state of Louisiana. Okay, like what your Speaker of the House is not doing for your state, you know. Now, granted, Brian Kelly was an abject failure by LSU standards. And I'm speaking of one of them Bengal fans, all right? Not Cincinnati, but LSU, okay? The team from Cincinnati kind of commandeered the Bengals, but that's fine. We could be on Tigers and Baton Rouge. There was a time we actually won national championships, Nick Saban. You know, just saying. Ed Orgeron, right? We know a thing or two about that. But that's a topic for another show. I'm anxious to see if James Franklin gets more than a, say, 4 to 6 year deal. Because normally your buyout is an equivalent to your average annual salary with time served. My thing is this. How long is he going to be given in Blacksburg to do his thing? Now, I'm going to tell you why this is a great hire for Virginia Tech. First off, obviously, James Franklin and his family are comfortable living in the sticks. State College is the sticks. You can't get lost going to State College because you have to be going there to get there. Blacksburg, similar. So you got the family dynamic, and it shouldn't be too earth-shattering from a cultural standpoint. All right? I still want to know the length of the deal, because in college sports these days, if you're not guaranteeing a coach 6 or 7 years, how do you build a program? What does your NIL model look like? And how do you just, you know, handle the nuclear option which would be the, if he doesn't turn it around and you want to make a change, how much money are you willing to eat? So, to be honest with you, college sports now has their own salary caps dictated for the players by NIL. And quite frankly, the benefits from NIL that kind of trickle down into coaching salaries, you know, greater sponsorships and a whole bit. And there are a lot of schools in America right now. College coaches, believe it or not, are a seven-figure salary everywhere. If you are a main, if your coach is in a power, I'm going to say really the power two conferences, really. There's power five. You can't, no. Mm-mm. Two conferences are relevant, all right? Let's be clear about that. There's the SEC and the Big Ten. Now, you know, it's all wonderful stories coming out of the ACC and the Big 12. I think it's warm and fuzzy to see James Madison on the list. But let's pump the brakes and talk about what it is. All right? They set the tone. Since NCAA can't regulate, Congress has bigger fish to fry, and this thing needs to be handled on their own. The SEC, easy for me to say, and the Big Ten need to set the tone on a salary cap for coaches. Mm-hmm. Imagine that. I know coaches don't want to hear that. We always talk about, you know, capping what the kids are getting in terms of NIL money. Right? What about capping the coaches' salaries? So that if he does not perform, you're not on the hook for generational wealth. And I'm sorry. Brian Kelly is still, I believe, owed $96 million from LSU, I think legally. Might be wrong about that. I know the governor of the state was trying to get involved to pay it off. But you know something? Therein lies a dilemma and a quandary wrapped into one. You don't want your governor in your state in the business of intercollegiate athletics with the federal cutbacks and how they're impacting communities where you got to be spending brain capital on how to navigate through the governmental slalom. If you know anything about those ski races, when you're going through the gates, the slalom runs, you need to be able to go downhill, which is like the fast runs. Governors got too much stuff on their plate right now to have to worry about regulating buyouts. But when you got coaches who are some of the highest paid people in the top 10 of salaries being given out to state employees in these states where food, you don't have SNAP benefits, you don't have adequate health care, you don't even have hospitals now. Okay, and unfortunately, the people in those communities probably voted for all of that, and that's a topic for another conversation. But still, how do you justify an expenditure of between $9 and $12 million annually to a dude that's a football coach? Really? So I see Nick Saban, Saint Nick Saban, always running up on Capitol Hill looking to put some kind of salary cap or, you know, capsule on mobility for student athletes. Make no mistake about it. In my opinion, Saint Nick Saban is a fraud. All right, and I'm probably sure I would catch a hell of a lot of grief from Jalen Hurts, Tua Tagovailoa, all the great receivers and whatnot. But when I listen to him go up to Capitol Hill and advocate against NIL, when does he take that same passion and go up on the Hill or to state legislatures or to create a salary cap for coaches in America? Because you got a lot of failed coaches who still got broke off generational wealth, and their families are set for life, and their families after that are set for life too. And they were losers. Okay? That's the amazing thing about it. So the time has come, boys and girls, for a salary cap on college coaches. Now, if the NCAA can't regulate that and Congress can't regulate that, who can? It shouldn't be a congressional thing right now because there are bigger fish to fry with the country. But when coaches are making that money and they fail and still get paid, I don't know how to write contracts, but I'm sure somebody could figure it out. It's Professor G. It's OG Sports Radio on Sports Rap Network.
My guy Lloyd Vance joins us right now as we talk a little National Football League. And the more things change, Lloyd, the more they stay the same. And I'll start in your domicile, if you will, Philadelphia. And it may not be pretty, but they keep on winning. And still, I don't know if I've seen a more disrespected champion playing at an elite level than I see with the Eagles. Are they wearing that as a badge of honor, or a chip on their shoulder? Because all we hear on the outside is the noise coming from within as far as a diva receiver being pissed off.
Well, you know, it's the joy of victory and the agony of reading about it and hearing about it from all their fans the next day, Mark. You know, a lot of people are questioning this Philadelphia Eagles team, and you're right. They don't have, you know, that respect that they should as a defending Super Bowl champion. And then when you look at their resume, quite frankly, Mark, they've beaten the Chiefs week two. They've beaten the Rams week three. They beat the Buccaneers week four, Green Bay week 10, and they just beat Detroit. So every major test they have passed. So, yes, they should be getting a lot more respect. And they are the NFC definitive number one team right now.
And that's a hands-down thing. Now, if there are any warts, where are they? Because I see them I don't see them vulnerable in too many areas, because if they play their A game, to your point, they are the best team in the NFC.
Mark, there's a couple things you have to look at in terms of the Eagles that they need to work upon. And the defense has gotten a lot better when they brought in Jalen Phillips coming over from Miami. N'Kobe Dean coming back from injuries made a lot of plays for them. Brandon Graham's more of a leadership thing. I think defensively they got to get some better play out of Adoree Jackson on the other side of Q Mitchell. He's playing extremely well. And then the biggest elephant in the room is the Eagles offense. You know, Mark, they're winning these games, but it's like they've won. And Jalen Hurts, he's throwing the ball efficiently, but he's not making those spectacular plays. And then you talked about that A.J. Brown situation. It still may boil over at a certain point, but it's all built around Saquon and that offensive line that's been very beat up for the Eagles.
Lloyd Vance with us as we talk National Football League here on Professor G's Classroom on Sports Rap Network. Lloyd, let's talk about the Cowboys for a second. And I was struck by the resilience of their performance on Monday night. 11 days since they lose Marshawn Nealon, you know, all the stuff that's hovering around them just by being Cowboys. Just the character that they showed last night to me is something that I normally don't associate with Cowboy teams. But to me, that was a character performance.
Yes, Mark, they did a good job in, you know, supporting the team members. And it is a tough situation losing such a young player, and he was early in his career. So I think they will rally around the locker room and try to get things done. But let's face it, it was the Raiders. You know, it's a good win per se, but they have a big key game coming up against the Philadelphia Eagles where we're really going to see who Dallas is. But they've jumped back into the playoff mix, and they can score points with anybody. The key, obviously, is that defense. Are they improving with Quinn and Williams and some other pieces coming in the door?
Yeah, and let me ask you about another team that I'm kind of conflicted about. That will be the Packers. Again, they like a box of chocolate. You never know what you're going to get. and that certainly seems to be the case with their quarterback, Jordan Love. What do you make of his progress? Is he about where he was, or in many respects, it looks to me as though he's taken a step back.
Mark, extremely inconsistent in his play. And the Packers' big win this season was week one. You know, they beat Detroit week one, and their other one was when they put a second half together against the Steelers. And other than that, Jordan Love's been extremely inconsistent. There's been games where you're like, what are you doing? You're holding the football too long, not getting out of their hands, taking sacks. And, you know, we'll see how the Packers do. They do have that tie that could help them, but you want to see them get tested some more because they came up short like when they played the Eagles. So they're playing Detroit in a couple weeks, and we'll see.
And Green Bay, in many respects, is almost like Pittsburgh of the NFC, because I'm looking at the Steelers right now, and the missing link was supposed to have been Aaron Rodgers. He's even missing right now, so to speak. I'm still conflicted with the Steelers. I believe in Mike Tomlin, but should I believe in the overall roster? Because we knew they were question marks offensively, but the defense is just, I mean, it's like an engine that's about to blow up.
Yes, Mark, always when you talk about the Steelers, like, they're going to run the ball with consistency and play great defense. And that has not been their calling card this season. That defense, they get pressure on a quarterback, but they're still allowing a lot of big plays. And their secondary in particular has had lapses in coverage. So the Steelers, inconsistent team. So they're in the mix in terms of possibly winning that bad division. They do have the Ravens coming on, who are 5-5. They won four straight games, and they're kind of jumping into the mix. And then the Steelers have this injury with Aaron Rodgers with his hand/wrist. They're not sure about that. So the Steelers will keep hanging around. Tomlin will have a winning season, but they have a big game coming up against the Chicago Bears, and then the Buffalo Bills, and then the Ravens.
Yeah, that's a murderer's row for a team that's inconsistent offensively, like they have been for most of the season. And I want to keep it in the North for a second on the AFC side to talk about this Shedeur Sanders thing. It was certainly an underwhelming performance that he had, you know, coming into a bad situation last Sunday, compounded by the fact that his house was broken into in Cleveland. So I'm looking at your house broken into during a game where you make your regular season debut. You caught a 100 mile an hour speeding ticket even before you went to training camp. I don't know what that says to you, Lloyd, but maybe Cleveland is just not a fit for Shedeur. You ever get to a point where you look at somebody who hadn't really been up under center consistently and say, hey, it's time for a change?
And Mark, you know, you got to wonder if there's bad karma there for Shedeur Sanders with the Cleveland Browns. And I think the biggest thing, Mark, is it was a shock that they really drafted him in the fifth round. You know, they take Dillon Gabriel in the third round, then they inexplicably take Shedeur Sanders fifth round. And I believe in the infrastructure of the team, there's members that want him and others that don't, particularly the head coach. I don't think Stefanski likes him. Obviously, a tough situation coming in after the concussion to Dillon Gabriel. And let's face it, young guy facing a defense of Zach Ward and the Ravens that's really starting to find their stride. And it was a tough situation for him. You hope that he gets a full week of practice and maybe gets a chance to start again. But definitely some rookie mistakes were made by him last week.
And so, too, I would argue that the rookie mistakes being made by a Cleveland front office. You know what I'm saying? I the whole development of him has reeked of Barnum and Bailey circus to me. It really has. There's been a real carnival-like quality to this. Who's more culpable, the organization or the player in that instance?
Yeah, that's a great question, Mark. And I think the big thing is you have to look at the owner, Jimmy Haslam. I think he was the one that decided to pull the trigger on grabbing him because he was kind of languishing in the draft. You know, he's sitting out there. I think the NFL wanted to give him his come ups. You know, they were like, okay, him and his father, we're going to put them in his place. I always thought he'd get his opportunity, but the fifth round was very late. They grabbed him. And I think Andrew Barry, he's the general manager there. He's on a hot seat, you know. I'm not sure if he was on board with this. And Stefanski, I definitely believe this had some malpractice in terms of his development. I just don't think he wants Shedeur Sanders and the distractions on his team.
All right. And speaking of malpractice, let's talk about the NFL and this sportsmanship thing that they've been trotting out all season long. And once again, in the game on Monday night, you see another player spitting on another player. We saw it open up the season before the first play from scrimmage. Right. We saw this hang out. Dude, what's going on with that? Any idea? Because it's not just one team. It's just random acts of overt disrespect.
Yeah, Mark, you know, when I've seen a lot in terms of, and it's interesting, I kind of lean on talking to my son who's in his 20s and he plays college football. It just seems a lot in terms of the younger generation of guys, you know, they don't care. They just, you know, a lot of it's in the heat of the moment, and they're just, they're coming at each other and yapping at each other. And I talk to older players a lot, you know, and I wrote a book with some older football players, and that's just something they wouldn't do. You know what right. I mean? They just, there's a line, there's a brotherhood, and you just don't cross it. But sometimes it just gets to a point where they lose their mind. You know what I mean? And it's up to these coaches and their staffs to kind of reel this stuff in, because you wouldn't expect, you know, a Belichick type coach player to do some kind of actions like that. You know, it's just over the line, some of this stuff, and they need to understand and respect.
Let me jump in and ask you this. How much do you think this is generational? Is this, you know, is this in your face? They would call it machismo back in the day, but you know where I'm getting at? This type of disrespectful flexing, shall we call it?
No, I do agree. I do think that's the case, Mark. You know, I've been at some of my son's games where in the handshake line, something pops off because, you know, from the game. And you're seeing this pre-games in colleges and all this stuff. It's just, you have to respect one another. And there's rules within the game. And the greats didn't need to operate that certain way. Yeah, if you wanted to get payback at somebody, you do it within the confines of the game. And spitting on somebody, that's just over the line. And I just can't believe it's happening out there.
All right, let's go on the clock for a second, because I opened my pothole, certainly as an admitted burgundy and gold apologist here in the DMV, that I want. Well, first off, I want to get your thoughts on Adam Peters' role in the demise of Jaden Daniels' second season. But secondarily, I'm beginning to have a man crush for my football team on Jeremiah Love. You put Jeremiah Love back there next to Jaden Daniels, I think you got something. So what would you say to that in my virtual world of front office for the NFL in the nation's capital?
Well, I think it could be a good thing. They definitely need to look at it. Their leadership and the situation in terms of is Kingsbury the right guy in terms of guiding this offense, because I don't think they did a good job in terms of setting it up leading into the season. And Jaden Daniels has been hit too early, too often. They got to do a better job with that offensive line. The rushing attack's been inconsistent. They got to find the right running back. They have like four guys in a room, and it's just like, okay,
right running.
Exactly. And then Zach Ertz doing a yeoman type job, but he's too old, and they need to find a younger tight end. McLaurin, that situation was like, what were they doing? They signed him too late. They let him hold out, and then the soft tissue injury comes into effect, just like everybody thought. And he's been, you know, not seen pretty much all season. So a lot of distractions and moving parts with the Washington Commanders. It was tough to watch over there in Madrid. They fought, but in the end, Mariota makes the bad play, and then Miami's moving forward. I think the Commanders should turn the page and look forward to next season.
We have breaking news from Spain. They will be charging tariffs on the NFL for exporting a product that bad last Sunday. Just this breaking news from the GFN, and we'll talk more about that down the road. That's my boy Lloyd Vance breaking us off with the NFL knowledge, as always, my friend. Next week, we got to start looking at the HBCU guys to keep a lookout for in the draft coming up at the end of the season right now, and I know you all over.
All right, Mark, looking forward to it. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks as always, my friend. Stick with us. We got more of what you came here for on the other side. It's OG Sports Radio. Holla back.